A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to episode 20 of the weekly Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson, and he, Ben Hobson.
Hello!
Each Tuesday, we'll be bringing you the latest news and views alongside an in-depth interview with an inspiring runner, or in this case, a nutritionist.
This week, we are talking about one of my favourite things ever. Food. And thankfully we've been joined by nutritionist Kim Pearson to explain more about running and food and how without one you cannot do the other.
Yep, a marriage made in heaven, no doubt. Well, I've been away for a bit, Ben, haven't I?
You have.
A couple of weeks.
Absconded.
Absconded. I took part in a race called the Escape from Great Britain and was one of the strangest races I've ever taken part in.
How do they find a winner? Like, what's the system?
So you're given a tracker,
right?
So everyone gets a tracker that you put in your bag, and that tracks you in real time. And It's all about like your distance as the crow flies.
Yeah.
So you could be like, oh, I did 60 miles, but essentially I went in this sort of fiddly little route.
Yeah.
And as the crow flies, I only went 25.
Got it.
Or whatever. So actually, to win, you want to be doing straight lines. But yeah, there's only about 30 people took part in the end, and one guy. Was talking at the beginning, he'd come over from Paris and he said, we were chatting and we were saying, oh, we'll probably try and do like a marathon distance a day. We weren't taking it super seriously. And he was like, yeah, I'm hoping to do 210 kilometres. It's like, wow, that's a long way. And he's like, yeah, because...
That was a really good French accent, by the way.
Yeah, in fairness, he said he was from Paris, but it didn't sound French.
Very good.
And he'd booked his flight 48 hours later from Birmingham Airport.
So his aim was just to run to Birmingham?
Yeah, just going to run to Birmingham on his own.
Right.
Hopefully win.
Did he make it?
And then get the flight back to Paris. He actually didn't... I think he... I don't know if DNF is the right word. You could essentially wrap it whenever you wanted to.
Got you, right.
So he did like a day and a half, covered over 100 miles, and then...
Had to get his plane, so he got a train.
Yeah.
Hey, I think I quite like that as a motivator.
Yeah, you're right. Like, it's kind of high stakes. And another guy was running to Penrith, so sort of on the edge of the lakes, and he was hoping to arrive. We left on Friday. The event started on noon on Friday, and he was hoping to get to Penrith for the park run.
Nice, okay.
The next morning. So, yeah, it was an eccentric group of people. We were last for the vast majority of the race.
Good.
And then a late rally meant we finished about fifth from last.
Well done.
Yeah, it was mainly on the Pennine Way, actually.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was lovely. Like, lovely, lovely countryside.
At a certain point, did everyone just split?
Yeah, everyone just sort of splintered at the start. And then a few of us were running together along the Pennine Way for a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, we were just walking with one bloke. He was kind of hiking, and he was on his own. He was like, yeah, I mean, I've put myself into a campsite, but I'm not going to get there till about 3 a.m., so I'll probably just bivvy down in the hills.
Where did you stay?
Well,
pubs, B&Bs.
We took what was christened the Southern Softie option.
For sure.
So everyone else was like, a few hardy women were like, we're not going to sleep. Like, 48 hours. And I was like, that's preposterous. We booked ourselves into two B&Bs on the first day, because there weren't many B&Bs in the Pennine Way. I didn't want to camp, obviously. I mean, come on. So the option was to either go 35 miles,
right,
which felt a bit punchy on the Pennine Way.
Yeah.
Or, seriously, about 12. So the first day, we covered 12 miles. So,
just to get to the B&B.
Yeah, so we were, and at that point, we were running about...
I could have done this.
We were running with five other people at the time. And in our number were three women who weren't planning to sleep,
right?
And the guy who was hoping to get to the campsite by 3 a.m. Mm-hmm. And we went to it's basically the first little town you get to south of Haltwhistle. And we're like, oh, we're just stopping here. And they're like, oh, cool, yeah, you're stopping to get a sandwich over. And we're like, yeah, and also to sleep.
For the rest of the day.
For the rest of the day.
So maybe the pub.
Yeah, so we stopped running at probably 5 p.m.
Well done.
Yeah, and but it was good. And the second day covered 33 miles.
Okay.
So that felt more like a proper shift.
Yeah.
Spent a bit of time in a boffy.
Right, good.
So it actually felt like proper kind of mountaineering. And then third day, about 15 miles.
Right.
But that third day finished at noon.
Right. Okay, that was the cut-off anyway.
Yeah. But no bravery points. I mean...
12 miles.
12 miles the first day was
rubbish.
It was really bad, yeah.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
The relationship between food and running can be complicated. We've spoken before about the mental battles many face when the topic is brought up, but there is another side to it. We as beings need fuel to keep going, and there are good and bad ways to do this. Thankfully, nutritionist Kim Pearson is here to talk us through how to power our engines. Kim, welcome to the Runner's World Podcast.
Hello, thank you very much.
No, it's great to have you on. Can we just talk a little bit about carbo loading? What's the theory behind carbo loading, and what are some of the ways actually you can do this right?
Okay, so the theory is what we're doing is storing up our energy stores, essentially. So within the muscle and liver cells, we're storing up glycogen so that we can use it as fuel to power us through race day. And the idea is that we do that through consuming carbohydrates in the days leading up to a big race. Now, as with most aspects of nutrition, it's a personalised thing. Right. So it's about working out how much and over what period of time works well for you, and also factor in your carbohydrate consumption based on your training runs, your rest periods, because it's striking that balance between getting enough but not too much.
Because I think that the sort of, I don't know, the associated image or the idea is that a ginormous bowl of spaghetti the night before.
Maybe like 10 p.m. the night before.
Is absolutely. But you said a few days. So that carb loading process needs to be sort of days rather than hours.
It depends on the race.
Right.
So if you're running a marathon, yes, ideally. But then again, it depends on the individual. So some people actually do quite well on relatively less carbohydrates and just fueling during the race. And I think one of the big problems that runners typically fall into the trap of is focusing so much on carbohydrates that we forget about everything else.
Right.
So we forget about the proteins, the healthy fats, the micronutrients like vitamins and minerals. So it's about making sure that we are not just giving ourselves the energy, but also supporting muscle recovery and our health in general as well.
Yeah, right. So it's not just about kind of big plates of bread and pasta.
All of the carbs. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the sort of like the basics of running nutrition is that I guess it's sort of preached that the carb is king, but in fact, you know, the protein and all those sorts of things, and again, like real food, and the importance of that rather than consuming vast amounts of sort of whey protein and all that sort of stuff. I mean, I assume that that's, you know, the first step is understanding the measures to take on real food rather than anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two considerations really when I'm working with runners. There is the basic day-to-day nutrition that we all as humans need to make sure that we cover off. And then there are the things that are more specific for runners.
Right.
So when I talk about structuring meals, I always talk about the importance of getting a source of protein, healthy fats, plenty of vegetables, so we're getting our vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and then the carbohydrates, depending the quantity and the quality, depending on runs. And I think that's another important thing to cover off. We talk about quantities of carbohydrates, but also quality is a really important consideration. So from a nutritional point of view, white refined carbohydrates like white rice, white bread, white pasta have had a lot of their vital nutrients stripped away through the refining process. Whereas if you're focusing on things like more whole carbohydrates like brown rice, pulses, beans, lentils, rye bread, for example, not only are they going to provide you with carbohydrates, they're also going to be providing essential vitamins that are essential for the conversion of food into energy. So vitamins, minerals and other important nutrients, as well as the carbohydrate.
We've heard a lot of stuff about this kind of low carb, high fat diets that have come in over the last few years. And it seems to really divide people between some people who say, you know, I can run 100 miles and I don't have an energy gel or hardly any carbohydrates. I do it like chewing on an olive or whatever.
Is this keto?
Well, I guess the keto is, I mean, Kim will know better than me, but that's kind of extreme version of low carbohydrate diet. Do you think that this is a viable diet for runners, or do you think that actually it's something that needs to be treated with a bit more caution?
It very much comes down to the individual. Mm. And what one really interesting area of nutrition at the moment is genetics and how our genetics determines what kind of diet suits us best. So, yeah, you absolutely do get some people who really thrive on a diet that is lower in carbohydrates and has more fat, protein. But then other people really will not do well at all on that. Yeah. So again, it comes back to what is right for the individual. But a ketogenic diet, to answer your question about that, is when you drop carbohydrates so low in your diet that the body switches over to burning fat as a primary energy source. And so some people are very effective at adapting to taking their fuel from fat rather than from carbohydrates.
Right. And the advantage of that, in theory, is that we've all got enough fat in our body to power us to run or from here to Edinburgh or whatever, as opposed to if you run just
on
carbohydrate. But that's sick of, isn't it? The idea that actually your fat stores are even on very lean athletes, everyone's got lots of fat that they could theoretically burn.
Well, there's the dietary fat and also our stored body fat. Right. And with carbohydrates, one thing to bear in mind is that they... You know, when you eat carbohydrates, you will get a peak in your blood sugar level, which gives you immediate energy. Any additional carbohydrates will be carried away and stored in cells. So, for example, the glycogen that we were speaking about previously. Mm. But that's all relatively short-lived. You know, the stores, so hence why we use things like gels during endurance runs to top up those glucose levels. But if you're already depleted, if you've already depleted your carbohydrate reserves and your body's adapted to burning fat, then you don't get these sort of peaks and troughs in available glucose because it's already gone. So your body's switched over to burning another energy source, if you like. Yeah. That's a very simplistic explanation.
No, that's a good way of explaining it, yeah.
It does sound like an ideal way of doing it, but obviously, as you mentioned, genetics is the key to that. So it's like you could try it as much as you want and it will never work for you.
Well, I think it's very interesting when you look at people as individuals and where their ancestors originated from.
Right.
So what we're starting to see, you know, when we look at genetics, people that have whose ancestors have come from different parts of the world, the diets that those ancestors have lived on really influences how well they respond to different foods now. So, for example, there are tribes in certain parts of Africa that largely live on meats that they've hunted and killed. Mm. And, for example, the Inuits have a largely, you know, sea, they eat from the seas. And then in other parts of the world, you have people that have spent, you know, years and years eating largely a plant-based diet.
Yeah. Mm.
And so, you know, a lot of the interesting research is showing that where your ancestors originated from dictates the types of diets that will suit you.
That's really interesting, actually.
Yeah, it is very interesting. Yeah. So the individual needs to sort of, these genetic tests you can take, which are fairly commonplace these days, and you send off a little blob of blood in a test tube and it sends you back your DNA makeup. Is that the sort of thing?
DNA is actually a mouth swab.
Is it?
But there are lots, yeah.
Oh, someone's got my blood.
Who do you send it to?
Oh, I don't know.
Just a sort of...
Just
a Hotmail address. Yeah.
But, you know, yes, you can go down the genetic testing route, but I think it's, I always really encourage people to test things out, see what works for you. Some people love journaling, making a note, and I think that can be really useful. So try out different types of diets, reduce your carbohydrates for a period of time, see how it makes you feel. You'll get some people who feel great and really feel energized. And then other people, you know, if they're training a lot, they just can't do that. It doesn't work for them at all.
Yeah, so it can be kind of trial and error DIY approach.
Yeah.
When it comes to real food versus sort of gels, so I'm of the opinion that there's nothing magical in gels and that actually you can make your own, you know, essentially
Absolutely.
From like, you know, blending a banana and some honey and getting your own gel, and I bored Ben with my own gel recipe.
Yeah, and everyone else.
But do you think that more people should be looking at kind of real food during races rather than a kind of gel-based strategy?
I think gels are easy and convenient. Yeah. You know, if you think of carrying around your squishy banana mixture, it probably isn't quite as practical as something that comes in a pouch.
Yes, that is true. But as far as actually like the performance advantage...
from a nutrition perspective.
From a nutrition perspective, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, this is an area where companies have put huge amounts of research in. Yeah. But actually, if you look at the ingredients of what goes into the gels, most of it you can make your own version at home. And it's interesting because I was at the Marathon Expo a couple of weeks back now, and I've noticed some of the newer companies that are launching onto the UK market really are going in a more natural direction. And they say, you know, you could make this at home yourself. Mm. We've made it for you. But the ingredients are very simple. They are things that you recognise. They're not full of synthetic flavourings, colourings of the past. So I really think that this is the way things are going.
If you look at the back of a gel and it says, you know, this is fructose and then, you know, glucose and those sorts of things, that's the same as... That's basically the same carbohydrate that you would find in... eating a banana, right? Is that...
Well, yeah. I mean, fructose is the sugar that you will find in fruits.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of them use maltodextrin. But you can buy this stuff.
Yeah.
If you wanted to make your own.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not aware of any particularly special ingredients that are patented and not widely available.
Have you ever made your own sort of gels or like energy balls or anything?
I can't say I have, no.
Well, if you want the recipe, just let us know.
Or listen to episode 18, where you told everyone about it.
Yeah, that's
true.
They're unfortunately, they're not a good colour at the minute. They're kind of...
Sludgy brown.
Sludgy brown, yeah. Mm. And that puts people off.
I tell you, that will be because of oxidation. So when it's exposed to the air, it's oxidising. So what you could do is put something in like a squeeze of lemon juice, which has vitamin C, which should prevent the oxidation. So in the same way that when you cut an apple, if you rub lemon juice onto that, it shouldn't go brown so quickly.
Wow.
It's there preventing the oxidation.
Oh, great tip.
There you go. Stop your banana oxidising.
You can try. I'm not guaranteeing you results, but, you know, give it a try. Let us know.
We mentioned proteins a bit before then, and I feel like there's more and more protein products have come out. And I'm a little bit dubious as to how much protein we actually need. I wonder if actually we're a bit obsessed with protein and kind of, are we actually overdoing it in the Western world?
Oh, I know. There are some really weird... I've seen protein pies, protein... Yeah, it's a bit odd. I think protein is really important. It's been very overlooked in the past, and it's not now. It's very much the in thing. I mean, people who are experts in nutrition have been banging on about protein for a long time because it is important structurally and functionally. We need it as humans. Our muscles are made from protein, our skin, the collagen and elastin that our skin is made from are proteins. So it's really important that we do consume optimal amounts of protein. It is possible to get enough from our diet alone, but protein powders can be really useful. So especially for people who are on a vegetarian or a vegan diet, and it can be useful for, you know, protein powders can be great for recovery shakes, breakfast smoothies for people who don't like savoury breakfast but feel better having protein for breakfast. I will quite often advise my clients to get protein in at breakfast because it fills you up, it keeps you satisfied, it will keep you going through to lunch, where cereals and toasts won't. Mm. And in terms of recovery, there's a lot of research into the importance of getting protein after training, after your runs, so that you're supporting muscle recovery.
Is there like a set? Because most of these servings always come in sort of like 15 grams or 20 grams per, you know, scoop and that sort of... Can your body process only a certain amount at a certain time, or is there sort of like an endless amount of protein you can be pumping in, or is it...
The figure that's thrown around a lot is 30 grams at a time, but really there's no solid research to back that up. Again, the amount you need really is dependent on the individual. The guidelines are a minimum of 0.8 grams per kilogram body weight per day, but that's a minimum recommendation. Right. And I find that most people do better yeah. on more of that. But in terms of protein powders, you know, 10, 20 years ago, they were all quite synthetic, you know, filled with synthetic additives, flavourings, colourings. And we had this idea that they were just for bodybuilders and kind of gym bros.
Yeah.
But these yeah. days, there are some really nice kind of protein powders that are much more natural, less processed, and you know, it's understood that we can integrate it into our diet in a lot of ways, not just kind of recovering from gym workout.
What are some of the brands that you would recommend then on protein powders?
There's a few good ones nowadays. There's a brand called Pulsin, which is good. I like, there's one called FreeSoul. Oh gosh, you're putting me on the spot now. Let me have a think. There's one called Macaca, which is nice. Sun Warrior do oh, yeah. good protein yeah, powders. Okay. Yeah. There's a brand called Purition, which do really nice, they call them kind of meal replacement, but they're not like your standard meal replacements. They have the protein powder, but then they have things like ground up nuts, seeds,
right.
apple pectin for fibre. So they're called Purition. That's a really nice brand okay. as well. Yeah. But there's a few good ones now.
No, that's good.
I think that the a bigger topic that kind of we talk about the nutrition and you know how, but is actually is gut health. And I think that how. Well, everyone who knows who's run a race and it's gone wrong and you need to visit the toilet, that immediately gut health can have a huge impact on your performance. But, I mean, the flora of the stomach, the microbiological elements of the stomach. But, I mean, that's super important, right?
Gut health is talked about a lot nowadays. And, yes, it is really important. So I think the important thing is if people are struggling with their guts when they're running, it's working out what's at the root cause of that. Is it a gel, for example, that they're using that's causing them problems? Is it anxiety and stress around the race? Is it something deeper rooted? So, for example, presence of pathogenic bacteria in the gut that is an ongoing problem but is made worse in certain situations. Is it a lack of beneficial bacteria in the gut? So this is a very interesting area, and there are some fascinating tests that you can do nowadays to investigate what's going on within your gut. So if people do have gut problems, there's a lot you can do to really find out what's going on. And again, I was talking earlier about keeping a journal, keeping a diary. So if runners are experiencing problems with their digestive system when they're running, it's a good idea to note down when it's happening. Is it at a certain point, at a certain time on their run? Is it when they've consumed something in particular before they've run or during the run? So keeping a diary and noting down what you're eating, what you're doing, how you're feeling, and when you're noticing those symptoms, you can start to link up, you know, what might be causing right. it.
I've never had any sort of food allergy testings or things like that, but you can sort of consume something and feel very bloated and all those sorts of things. And I can assume that's just your stomach sort of having a mild reaction to these sorts of things.
We don't forget that when you're running, your body isn't prioritising digestion.
Yeah, true.
You know, it's prioritising bringing available energy to you so that you can run. You'll have presence of stress hormones there that are kind of carrying you around, especially if it's a big race. You're bound to be feeling a bit buzzed for that.
Yeah.
And your body in that situation isn't going to be prioritising your digestive function.
So, Kim, if people want to find out more about nutrition in general, is there anywhere that they can go?
Yeah, sure. I've got a website. It's kim-pearson.com. And I've got a newsletter that I send out every week. So if people would like to subscribe to that, I can keep you updated with running and nutrition updates.
That sounds great. Kim, thanks so much for coming on the Run As Well podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
You're looking quite bronzed.
Thank you very much. I've been on holiday, Ben.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Well, I was in Sardinia, which is like Italy with worse food.
Oh, you're never going back there again.
No, it was very good. We were on the east coast of Sardinia, which is the kind of the particularly volcanic kind of hilly, beautiful beaches, lots of beaches where you have to kind of trek about 90 minutes to get to.
Did you do any running on your holiday? Because I think we can have a discussion about, I think holiday running is the best running.
Yeah, I really like holiday running, but a bit too much.
Right, yeah.
Because I think it's, you know, if I had my way, I'd be like, oh, I'll go out for an hour or 90 minutes.
Every day.
Every day. Or yeah. I might even kind of, one of the destinations of the day might be, oh, look, I know it's like, there's not a beach there, but that trail looks absolutely spectacular.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, I, because I've got this North Downs Way 100 thing coming up, which is
You haven't mentioned it.
Yeah, about 6 or 7 weeks away, and that's, I'm starting to realise, you know, just how big a task that is. So I was like keen to get out.
Yeah.
And obviously the loads of hills, so it was good for that, on that front. But you have to sneak these things in, I think. I was like, I think I had an hour a day that I think was probably all right to do that. But I did enjoy it, but I was kind of, I wanted to balance that along with...
Well, are on holiday.
You're on holiday, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So what is it about holiday running that you like?
So I think it's sort of like twofold. I think that firstly, you're in a new place.
Yeah.
And I immediately like want to have an explore, and I think that running is such a lovely way of doing that, because you kind of, you don't go very far, or I certainly don't, but you kind of like finding a little loop to do is always quite interesting. And then I think that because the holiday aim is to just relax and to do nothing, it kind of frees up time that would have just been consumed by life in general.
Yeah, right.
So the actual balance between I'm going to go off for an hour running is much easier to happen with like shared childcare and like wanting to read a book later and the pool time and all that sort of stuff. So that's why I think I like it, because there's a real like trade-off in time that's doable between the family unit and who, like, if Luce wants to go off and like, you know, have a swim for an hour later, then I'll do that. And it's a fair trade-off rather than anything else. That's why I quite like it, because there's a quality to holiday time.
Oh, that's good. No, I think that's right, to get that right balance. It also was a reminder to me of the importance of recovery, because I think when you're on holiday, if you're doing a kind of beach holiday, you might kip during the day, or you might wake up at like, you know, you've got young kids, maybe not, but otherwise you might wake up at sort of 10 a.m. or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And it's amazing. You have a kind of what might be an athlete's life.
Oh, the afternoon nap thing is that holiday thing where you get the extra sleep and time and stuff.
Yeah.
And you go, I feel so much better.
Yeah, and you could feasibly go out running in the evening. Like, I felt like I could have run quite hard every day if I wanted to. Yeah. I felt like invigorated enough by the evening to do that. And you think, actually, if you're at work and you're sitting down and there's a stress of work and all that kind of stuff, that eats into your recovery, actually.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, more evidence that holiday running is the best.
Yeah. I'd be interested to know what our listeners have to think about holiday running. Do you pack your trainers? Are they the first thing that go in your suitcase, or do you try to choose or make holidays a time free of running? Let us know. Let us know. podcast@runnersworld.co.uk.
This is the Runner's World Podcast.
Once again, Runner's World's very own Columbo, Kerry McCarthy, is here to give us an update on all the latest happenings across the world of running. Tell us about some news.
Some news. What's been going on? Okay. So I'm going to start this week with Caster Semenya, who's been back in the news again. For those of you listeners who might recognise the name, but you're not quite sure why, the quick recap is this. She's the South African athlete who's been kind of battling the governing body, the IAAF, pretty much since 2012. Because she has naturally elevated levels of testosterone in her system. She is a double Olympic champion. She's a 3-time world champion, all over 800 metres. And the IAAF basically got on her case because she was winning races really very comfortably. They then brought in legislation which kind of set a limit on the levels of testosterone in female athletes' bodies, which meant that if Semenya wanted to continue over the 800 and 1500, with it being capped at 1500, she would have to take a testosterone suppressing drug. Right. So Semenya has obviously been battling this because it will obviously decrease her level of performance, and she says that's unfair. So over the last week, it's been going back and forth for years, like I say. Over the last week, she has been named in South Africa's World Championship squad for the World Championships in Doha later this autumn, which shows their faith in her. They've not confirmed which distances she would take place, she would run at the moment. They're waiting to see the outcome of this case. She went and ran last week a 2,000-metre race in Paris. And now, to stress that the testosterone, the elevated testosterone, only works up to, they say only has an effect up to 1,500 metres. Right. Yeah. So her going and running 2,000 metres and winning it very comfortably, like she did, is her way of saying, screw you, basically. Yeah. She absolutely slaughtered everyone in it. And then last week, the Swiss Federal Supreme Court suspended the IAAF's ruling, which meant that she can continue to compete without any medication. The Court of Arbitration for Sport had said, this is quite key actually, they had ruled against her recently. And in their judgment, they said they found that for athletes with differences of sexual development, this was discriminatory, but concluded that the discrimination was necessary, reasonable and proportionate to protect the integrity of female athletics. That's a bit of a cat among the pigeons. Semenya obviously said, no, thank you very much. I'm going to go to the Supreme Court. They've put a stay on it. They've not said she could compete forever. Right. But the case continues. But for now, she can continue doing what she's good at.
It's a really complicated one. But I'm glad that she's running.
Let's have a look at her performances. Now, her PB over 800 metres is 1:54.25. If she was such a kind of like a freak of nature, this would be far and away a world record. Yeah. It's not the world record. It's off it by a second. She only has the fourth fastest time ever. And actually, even the athlete in 12th place is within a second of her time. Mm-hmm. So it's not extraordinary. The 1,500 metres, her PB is 3:59.92. The great Genzebe Dibaba set the world record in 2015 at 3:50.07. Right. Semenya doesn't even come in the top 25 over the 1,500 metres. Mm. So there's an argument to say that actually her performances aren't that extraordinary, and she's competing possibly in an era where she's made to look especially good.
Because of an inferior competition.
Well, just, you know, let's just say there's a lack of comparable talent or lack of similar grade superstars. Yeah. Now, I know, you know, it's very complicated for the other athletes who are competing with her because obviously they're females as well. They would be horrified if it were happening to them. They have every sympathy. But at the same time, this is their livelihood. Yeah. Medals equals money, basically. And, you know, they want to get more of them. But my opinion would be it's just kind of tough luck. Mm. Just for anyone who is competing in the era of Bolt or Michael Phelps, are you going to say Bolt is banned because he has an abnormally long stride length? Phelps had massive hands, which still does, presumably, unless they're the double transplants.
Good God.
But when he was competing.
Breaking news.
Yeah. But, you know, they were like paddles in the water. Are you going to say that East Africans have an unfair advantage because they have a higher preponderance of slow twitch muscle fibres over Caucasian athletes? It's just, yeah, I find it highly ironic that the IAAF are struggling to contain the use of performance-enhancing drugs, and yet they're promoting, you know, the use of a performance-suppressing one.
Yeah. I think it's a really good point. And like say, athletes at top level are extraordinary physiologically, almost by definition. So this is maybe just another example of that. And like say, the times aren't extraordinary. Maybe it's actually she's competing in an era where there isn't that much competition. Not her fault.
Yeah. We will see. It continues. Moving on, I suspect anybody who's on social media, the way the algorithms work, whether you're a runner or not, you will have seen over the last week the furore, if I might put it like that, over the Nike plus size mannequins.
Yes.
But for those who haven't heard, Nike have started displaying plus size mannequins in their stores. A journalist at The Telegraph wrote a piece saying how awful that was, and everything kicked off. So here's a couple of quotes from the journalist. I fear that the war on obesity is lost, or has even, as is fashionable, ceased to exist, for fear of upsetting people into an early grave. The new Nike mannequin is not size 12, which is healthy, or even 16. A hefty weight, yes, but not one to kill a woman. She is immense, gargantuan, vast. She heaves with fat.
Well, it's just it's a terrible language, isn't it? Yeah, exactly. I mean,
when this was first sort of pictured and on social media when it first came up, it was purely celebratory. So there was the sad factor of life is that it was actually celebratory with sort of a limited amount of reach. And then obviously the journalist, she wrote this piece, sensationalised the whole sort of thing. And then that's when it kind of escalated quite quickly.
Yeah, she promoted her, obviously, as all journalists do, you promote your own piece on social media. And when she linked her piece, she put, "The new mannequin is obese and she is not readying herself for a run in her shiny Nike gear. She cannot run. She is, more likely, pre-diabetic and on her way to a hip replacement. What terrible cynicism is this on the part of Nike?" I would say Nike have been the beneficiaries of massive PR boost.
Yeah, there. Huge, definitely.
You know, they've said nothing. They've consistently refused to give comment to it. They've just let it be, as I think they should. And as many, many people responding have, you know, they've obviously responded in their own way. But the one point that everybody's making is, how can you have a go at larger people and say you should lose weight and then say, oh, but there shouldn't be any kit for you to work out in?
Yeah. And do it in private, in baggy clothes.
Yeah. Exactly. But the effect it had in the end, apart obviously, you know, who knows whether it was clickbait or not. Obviously, that piece got a lot of traffic. But it just brought people together again. Mm. And people were supporting each other and saying, here's a picture of me. I am exactly the same size as that mannequin. Yeah. Here's me powerlifting, running, walking the dog in the Highlands, whatever it is. Yeah. And everyone passing each other back, which should be the case. If you're moving your body and you're trying to be healthy, massive thumbs up. And finally, just it's kind of tangentially related to running rather than core, but I don't think I know any runners that don't love coffee.
Yeah,
we all rely on it to get us out the door before a session. And I spotted some recent research that's been done by the University of South Australia. There's an upper limit apparently for how much coffee is safe when you're talking about heart disease risk. Right. So basically, it was a bit of a metadata study. The researchers delved into UK biobank data of more than 347,000 people. The age range was 37 to 73, and they wanted to explore how the caffeine metabolizing gene helps carriers process caffeine, as well as identify the risks of cardiovascular disease as it relates to consumption. Basically, to cut a long and very boring sciencey story short, those drinking more than 6 cups of coffee a day had almost a 25% higher risk, a 22% higher risk of cardiovascular disease than those who drank 1 to 2 cups a day. And how fast you metabolise it has nothing to do with it. So if you're one of those nutters that can have a double espresso at 10 o'clock at night and still sleep, that's not going to help you, actually, is what this is saying. Interestingly, if you don't drink any coffee at all, that's not good for you, in the opposite direction. Right. The study also suggests, it says here, that the heart protective effects of drinking some coffee, since non-drinkers had an 11% increased risk of cardiovascular disease compared to those who drank 1 to 2 cups daily.
Right. There's a sweet spot.
A couple to get you going in the morning.
Yeah.
Probably no more after lunchtime. That's my rule.
Thanks a lot, mate.
No worries. See you next time.
Yeah, see you next time. Cheers. So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. I'd like to say a huge thanks to our guest, Kim Pearson, no relation, and to Number 8 Studios in Soho, where this was recorded.
For more news, reviews, interviews, and much, much more in the world of running, please head over to runnersworld.com/UK. Please like and subscribe on iTunes, and thanks to Acast, our hosting partner. Thanks for listening.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.